Hey everybody, welcome to a brand new chapter of Old Man Brad. I have a great episode for you this week. We're going to talk all things Last Night at Terrace Lanes. And I also have an interview with the director, Jamie Nash. Whether this is your first time in or you're returning for another episode, thank you so much for giving me a listen. If you love Old Man Brad, drop me a review over on your favorite podcatcher, whether that's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Good Pods, whatever it may be. I'd love to hear what you think of the show. So, like I just said, we're going to talk Last Night at Terrace Lanes. This came out this week on VOD, so you can rent it anywhere you rent your digital movies. It's released by Dread Presents, part of Epic Pictures. Anyone who either knows me, I may not have discussed as much on this podcast, but I had previously on the Cinema Guys and on social media. I'm a big fan of Epic Pictures, Dread Presents movies. Candy Corn is one of my favorite indie horror films. They've done many others that I've enjoyed quite a bit, like Benny Loves You. They released the original Terrifier, as well as a couple good horror anthology films, Tales of Halloween, Bad Candy. They're the ones who released Big Ass Spider, which I really love, and so many other great films. I've really enjoyed most of the movies that have come out from Epic Pictures and Dread Presents, and highly recommend you check out some of their movies, because they're doing a great job with indie horror. I mean, this year alone, they've come out with Satanic Hispanics, which everybody knows how much I loved that movie. The Jester, which was a pretty enjoyable film, and now this one, The Last Night at Terrace Lanes. And I know that they have more in the works to come throughout the rest of this year. So I'm really excited to see what other indie horror films they bring to us. Enough about that. Let's talk about Last Night at Terrace Lanes.
Good morning, my children. And it is a good morning. The moment of transformation is upon us. Tonight is the night, the end of ends. We've always known what we have to do, but we didn't know where to do it until now.
This place, it's so retro. Besides, this is our last chance. Tomorrow they're tearing this place down.
Dorks, now it's a party!
When a bloodthirsty cult invades a bowling alley on the final night of operation, a high schooler on a date from hell must join forces with her survivalist dad to fend off the crazed murderers. This is directed by Jamie Nash, and we will hear from Jamie here very soon. And this stars Ken Arnold, Francesca Capaldi, Mia Ray Roberts, and many others, written by Adam Caesar and with a story by Jenna St. John. And, you know, this film, going in, I wasn't sure what to expect. I really didn't watch. I watched a trailer, but only part of it, because I didn't want to get too spoiled. I knew this took place in a bowling alley. I knew there was a crazy cult invasion on this bowling alley, but that's about it going in. And I was highly entertained and had a blast, such a blast with Last Night at Terrace Lanes. It was such a fun film. You had this nostalgia of the bowling alley, which I loved. I loved all the shots in the bowling alley. Jamie will talk to that a little bit when we get into the interview about what he had to do and how quickly he had to shoot on this film. Love that nostalgia of the bowling alley, this cult siege slasher that happens. You know, you have this cult come in and they start killing people, and it just turns into mass chaos. And the character Bruce, played by Ken Arnold, oh my gosh, he was so great, so funny. This movie didn't hold back on any gore or blood or kills, and it definitely didn't hold back on some of the laughs. Some of my favorite parts were when the character Bruce, and they're trying to figure out how to survive this and get out of this situation. I feel like this is how I would act, was the way he acted, like just grabbing stuff in this storage shed. First he grabs a chainsaw, and his daughter is just like, what is wrong with you? Kind of like, you're an idiot. You're like a man child, which is exactly probably how I would react. And then he was like, I got to get my fireworks. And it's so funny. So great. Highly recommend checking out Last Night at Terrace Lanes. It is worth the watch. And it is one that I will definitely add to my collection when the physical copy comes out, because I enjoyed it that much. All right, enough about my rambling about this movie. Go rent this movie. Go watch it. Go seek it out. Let's roll into my chat with the director of Last Night at Terrace Lanes, Jamie Nash. And I will talk to you on the other side. I'm excited for my guest. He is a writer, director, a producer. He has many films under his belts, like Comedy of Horrors, The Night Watchman, amongst many others. But he has a new film that just came out called The Last Night at Terrace Lanes. I want to welcome in Jamie Nash. How are you doing today?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on. This is cool.
Tell everyone a little bit about Last Night at Terrace Lanes.
So Last Night at Terrace Lanes, it's a movie from Epic Pictures, who, you know, most people know as Dread Central. Like, that's where I, you know, I'm an old school horror guy, so I've been reading Dread Central forever. And it was shot here in, I live in Maryland. It was shot in Frederick, Maryland, by a company called Cinematic Productions, which has done a whole bunch of movies, that some of which I've been involved with. Most recently, Satanic Hispanics, which was an anthology that came out.
I made it on my top list of horror from last year. So
okay, so the Vampiro one was shot here, and that was okay. The one I was involved with. Eduardo Sanchez directed it. And my background, if you look at my IMDb, all of Eduardo's movies that aren't The Blair Witch Project have been in some ways involving me, either usually in a writing capacity,
okay,
and sometimes in a producing capacity. So he and I work a lot together, and he's involved. He's one of the executive producers of this movie, Terrace Lanes. So to tell you a little bit about it, the general pitch is, it's kind of like, it starts out with this like John Hughes kind of date kind of movie, and they're going to this bowling alley that's about to close its doors for the last time, the last night. It's the last night of Terrace Lanes. And it's kind of this date from hell. Then it becomes more hellish because this kind of evil, kind of misguided cult, they're kind of a bunch of idiots in some ways, targets it for this final ritual they're doing. They lock the doors, and then the mayhem begins. And it really becomes like a survival film inside the bowling alley. That's the high-level pitch. To give you some ideas, though, just super quick of the production, we had a bowling alley, a star, and a one-page pitch. And the bowling alley was set to close. It had closed down a week before they contacted me and told me about this. And it was set to basically be torn apart in like 8 weeks. So we basically had 8 weeks to write a script, shoot a movie. Not post-production, we had plenty of time. We had all the time in the world.
Yeah.
Write, cast, pre-production, shoot the movie, and then get out of there from the bowling alley that we had. We actually rented the bowling alley for those last days. They like got a little bit of juice out of, like a little bit more juice out of the squeeze before they tore it apart. But there was no coming back. We had like one chance to get it. The story was kind of, you know, life imitating art. The whole last night at Terrace Lanes, the bowling alley was called Terrace Lanes. It was a fixture in Frederick, Maryland. That's where Eduardo Sanchez is from. And everybody, you know, is their family bowling alley growing up and stuff like that. And we shot every square inch of it. We shot the alleys. We shot the shoe bin. We shot the food rack, where the pizza's made. You know, behind the scenes, the bathroom, the roof. I mean, we went through every square inch of that and used every prop imaginable in a bowling alley to make this movie.
As you said, like, once you were done, they're going to tear this down. There's no pickups, there's no reshoots, there's no anything like that. Did you find yourself going, okay, we have to shoot a lot of extra just in case when you're hitting post-production?
Yes and no. There just wasn't time to shoot too much extra. We were on a fast-moving train. I think our shoot days totaled, it was something like 10 shoot days.
Okay.
And if you know filmmaking, like I've worked on a lot of independent films, usually you hit about 20 on a fast project. You usually get about 20 days on a fast project. 18 is really short. Like when I hear 18, I'm like, ooh, that's tough. 10 is tough. 10 is tough. So, and when I say 10, we had 2 half days before it started. So it's really like, I guess we had 12 days total.
Okay.
But yeah, with 10 days, you're shooting, you know, 6 to 8 pages a day. You're just ripping through stuff. You don't get a lot of time to get extra. And the script written by my buddy, Adam Caesar, which we can talk about in a bit, it was very ambitious. It's got extras. I mean, it, you know, all the things, like if you made a list of what not to do on an independent film, it, you know, it had 30, 40 people bowling at all times. So you had to worry about all that kind of continuity. It has a lot of action. It's because it is like a siege movie, you know? So
okay.
Unlike a lot of horror movies that'll be more slasher and, you know, things like that, very contained or quick hit violence, it's actually got fight scenes and stuff and stunts. Oh, we did a full burn, you know, we did all kinds of stuff for 10 days and also not a huge budget. You know, it's definitely a low budget film. That's the long answer to your question. We didn't really have time to get all the extra, extra. Yeah.
Doing this, like, did it help bringing in, you know, like Ken Arnold, you've worked with him multiple times before, sure. Or, you know, your producing partner, Eduardo Sanchez, being able to have familiar faces on the project, did that help be able to not only speed it up, but keep things like flowing?
Yeah. Yeah. I'd say that helps in many different ways. One, just because we do have that shorthand, I know what they bring to the table. I know what they do. There's never a question like, are they going to do it? Aren't they going to do it? Is the thing going to be there? Isn't it going to be there? Are they going to be good in the day? You know, all those things are kind of answered. I know what they bring to the table. But on top of that, they've also been in the trenches before. So as stressful or as difficult or whatever as a 10-day low-budget production in a bowling alley could be, they keep level heads. They've been there before. Nobody really goes into a complete panic or anything. Nobody gets like too upset. We all stayed friends afterwards, which is rare in an indie film. Usually somebody hates somebody, right? There's usually something. That's what I found in indie. If I look back through my career, practically every movie, somebody probably ended up hating somebody on some movie. Like, I'll never work with that person again. But I'd work with these guys in a heartbeat again. I mean, every single one of them, great director of photography, just hardworking guy, just all of them. But I think that's the biggest thing is just, it's just that kind of thing where, oh yeah, this is a tough situation, but we'll figure it out. You know, we'll crack it.
To jump over to the writing side, like you've done quite a bit of writing and a lot of directing that you've done, it's stuff that you've written. So were you a writer on this, or this is someone else wrote it and then you directed it?
Yeah, this is so Adam Caesar, who is a guy I've written scripts with.
Okay.
So he's another known quantity. Like I knew what he brought to the table. He wrote this script based on a treatment that was written by another person, Jenna St. John. And that, when I say a treatment, it was a one page kind of treatment. Like she came up with the concept.
Okay.
And they sold that concept to Dredd with the, you know, we got the bowling alley, we got the lead actor, here's the concept. We need your answer right away because we only have 8 weeks or whatever before they tear the bowling alley down. So Adam and I came on at the same time. Like we were there at the same time. So I was heavily involved in the script. You know, you got to give notes and all that stuff as a director. But this is one he wrote. It came together so fast though. Like in two weeks we had a script, and I'm doing stuff to kind of adapt the script at that point. You know, to figure out what the bowling alley really looks like and change things around and move. You know, take advantage of things that we see at the bowling alley, which we didn't really see the week before we shot in it because of the collapse time schedule. Yeah. So he wrote it. He's a very accomplished author. He wrote a book called Clown in a Cornfield. That's a series now. It's like a best-selling young adult slasher horror book.
Okay.
So he's doing quite, and I think, well, I'm pretty sure it's public knowledge, but they're making a movie of that now as well. And that's a big movie. They get more than 10 days to shoot. That'll be a real, real movie.
Now, with the quick turnaround, scripts, filming, everything else, it ends after it was all done, after you were, you know, you hit post-production and got the film finished. What has the journey of this been like? Did it go like festivals? Is it done anything like that? Or
In this particular case, and I think a lot of the Dread stuff, like I can't think of too many. I mean, Satanic Hispanics did festivals, but most of their other stuff, they just go right into let's make money kind of phase with it. So it didn't. This will be the first time people get to see it is Tuesday when it's...
It'll be out by the time everybody hears this. So go rent it and check it out.
we're doing a little premiere here in town Sunday night. And that'll, I guess, technically be the first time people get to see it, but just for a select, you know, couple hundred people.
Okay.
But yeah, so the journey was, I mean, it took some time to edit and stuff, not because it took time to edit. It really didn't take much time. But the particular company, that Cinematic Productions, and it's Carlo Glorioso and his partner Corey and Ed, they did like five movies back to back to back in a year, like five horror movies. The Jester was another one that they made.
Yep, I've seen that.
Yeah, so that was shot actually after ours.
Okay,
that one was like when I say after, it was like the month after. You know, it was like they immediately went and shot that one, and then they. They were still kind of on post on Satanic Hispanics when they shot ours. Like when I said those 2 half days, the crew had to split because they were doing pickups on Satanic Hispanics. So they spent a year just grinding these movies.
Wow.
They had an opportunity to make a lot of low budget horror films. And they just kept saying, yes, and, you know, we want to do more. We want to do more. Feed us. So they did. I'm trying to think. They did those three, Satanic Hispanics, Last Night, and The Jester. And then there's two more horror movies that are still in the pipeline. One will probably be announced really soon. I helped produce that one. And then they did one family film. And I don't know much about the family
film. Okay.
I know about all the other ones, but I don't know about the family film. So yeah, they did 6 movies in like a 14-month span. And because of that, our post-production was a little slower, I think, just than it could have been. Like originally we were like, oh, let's post-produce it in 2 months, get it out there, you know, and do all that. But it didn't end up that way because the editor was like one of their producers and, you know, things like that. So it generally took probably like another 10 months or something to fully get it to the finish line. Just, you know, slow editing process, sound design, all that stuff, color correction, all the usual stuff, just because they weren't in a massive hurry and they were higher priorities at the time. So then once it was done, it was like, let's schedule it for release. And it just landed in this January slot. The Jester was going to come out around Halloween. Mm-hmm. And this one's going to come out in January.
A lot of the projects you've worked on, there is a lot that you gravitate towards the comedy side of things. Is that always been like influenced through your life of like, I love comedy, and how did you mesh the comedy and horror together as you kind of came along?
It's an interesting thing. When I first started to screenwrite, I thought I was going to be like a comedy writer. I started to write, like I did a lot of things that were, it was around the time of like when the Farrelly brothers were popular and stuff like that.
Okay.
I was like, I kind of wrote a lot of stuff in that vein, like those style of Kingpin comes to mind, you know, another great bowling epic. So when I first started screenwriting, I started to write comedy. But honestly, the movies I loved as a kid were horror movies and sci-fi and action movies like Steven Spielberg and RoboCop. And I don't know, there are all these movies, all the typical stuff that guys my age would have loved, you know, and even action movies like Die Hard and stuff like that. So at some point I was like, even though I thought my skill set ran to comedy, and that's what I was good at, I want to write the things I loved kind of as a kid. So I kind of made a pivot from writing just comedy. And my first pivot was horror comedy, because I saw a lot of people making horror comedy at the time. And I honestly, when I pivoted from comedy, I was like, maybe I'll make something myself. Like that was kind of, when I got into screenwriting, I was like, that was my dream, you know, was to be Kevin Smith.
Okay.
Something like that. Okay. It wasn't necessarily to be Shane Black. It was to be Kevin Smith. So horror comedy seemed like an obvious choice. Like I'd be like, I saw all these people around me doing independent film and they were all doing horror. And I was like, well, I could do a horror comedy. You know, I could try that. Mm-hmm. And that's what I started with. You know, so I pivoted to that. And my first scripts that kind of got real attention and actually got made were my horror comedy scripts. Like, they were the ones that kind of popped for people.
Okay.
And that's kind of how I ended up in horror comedy. To, you know, it was kind of the melding of the two.
You have, obviously, a background as a writer. Did you come as a writer first before hitting, you know, directing, producing, all that type of stuff?
Honestly, when I first got into it, I was thinking I was going to make my own stuff. I didn't even know that there were really pathways to be a professional screenwriter.
Okay.
I didn't even know that was a thing, really, for me.
Okay.
For me here in Maryland. I live in Maryland. I still do. So it was all about, how do I just make my own thing? How do I get a camera? How do I get some friends? How do I do it? So when I first started, that's what it was all about. So everything I did kind of had, I'm going to make this myself at some point. That was where I started. But I quickly learned, especially after I like made my first feature film on my own, I didn't necessarily love how all-encompassing the directing thing was. After I had written so many scripts, I realized how I'd write 3-4 scripts in a year. But if I did a movie, it would suck me, you know, it would suck all my energy for like 2 years, you know?
Yeah.
So I could concentrate on one thing for like 2 years. So I quickly learned that writing, like creating, I kept having all these ideas, especially early in my career. I had so many ideas and I just wanted to go after all of them. The directing thing was really hard. And I also started to find ways where I could get paid for writing, where nobody was really going to pay me to direct. Directing was always a thing I had to pay for the privilege of directing. I had to produce it myself. I had to write a check or find people to pay. And I was like, well, screenwriting, people are actually paying me and I'm loving it. So again, it was kind of a evolution, like, oh, this is something I love to do. It can pay the bills. I'm good at it. Yeah, I kind of switched to that. But I always, to this day, I mean, the original reasons I got into this was to direct, to create things, to kind of be on things end to end. So whenever I get a chance, this is what I always say, if somebody else is paying, if I don't have to pay to direct, call me up. I'll be there. Okay. Because I love to do it. I love working with the actors. And as long as I don't have to write a check, it's not even so much about how much they pay me. But as long as I don't have to write a check, I will show up. Because
as long as those production costs are helped.
It's a privilege. It's a real privilege to be, you know, have somebody hire you as a director. It's kind of an amazing privilege, in my opinion, to ever have that happen. So I'm very grateful whenever it happens. I'm very grateful in this case that they came to me and hired me to work on this project.
What do you have coming for in the future? Any projects that you can talk, if you can't talk about them, that's fine. Like, do you have some things like ideas and?
Yeah. I can kind of dance around a couple.
Okay.
the funny thing was, and this is another directing thing, so that's why I'm really excited about it. I got hired to direct an audio drama, like a weekly podcast kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say what it is. The weirdest part about that one is I can't say what it is yet just because it hasn't been publicly announced.
Okay.
But it's due out in March. I mean, so you'll know pretty quickly, probably in, you know, 3 weeks from now, they'll be publicly announcing it or something just to, you know, start greasing the skids, so to speak. And that was something I wrote and directed. I was hired to do it. And I love that process because it's all the fun things about directing without all the things that you don't like about directing. So it's kind of like you and I, we use StreamYard.
Yeah.
And it was me and a bunch of actors, and I love working with actors. And for 8 straight hours, it was just acting and directing. And that's all it was.
I got to set up a shot. I got to get the props over here.
None of that. We didn't have to wait for 2 hours while the lighting crew adjusts or while the actors get their makeup or any of that stuff. Woke up, we turned it on, we said, scene one, let's give it a shot, you know, and then they acted and I gave notes and they did it again. And we did, you know, I loved it. I thought it was great. I want to do it again for sure.
Okay.
So anyway, that's one thing I have coming out. I know there's something, I wrote a kids movie last year, an animated film that's supposedly in development, though it's not something necessarily I've been working on like day to day, called Santa.com for a company called Curiosity Inc. And it's a big animated Christmas movie. So hopefully hopefully in the, I think it's due out in 2025 because animation takes time.
Yeah.
And they just started to work on it, I think, in the fall. Those are two things that I can think of off the top of my head that I know are coming down the pipe besides Terrace Lanes. And like I said, I produced a couple movies that will eventually be from the same team that brought you Terrace Lanes. There's a couple more movies that will probably be announced in the next couple months as well.
Where can people follow along to you and to, you know, to find more out about Terrace Lanes, what you have coming out and everything else?
The best way for me, I'm still mostly on Twitter just because that's where I built my following and I refuse to just quit it. You know what I mean?
Same way.
So I'm like, yeah, when they shut it off, or when they charge me, I'll be gone. Like if one day they say, you got to pay a dollar. I'll be like, yeah, I'm not doing it anymore. So I'm at Jamie_Nash. I'm pretty easy to find there. And I also have a website, jamienash.net. I'm the author of two screenwriting books, Save the Cat Writes for TV and the Save the Cat Beat Sheet Workbook. So a lot of the stuff on my website pertains to that. It's kind of like people that want script consulting or I write a lot of blogs about screenwriting and storytelling and stuff like that.
Well, Jamie, I want to thank you for taking the time out of your day to come on and chat with me about everything, writing, movies, all that. And I wish you the best of luck with Terrace Lanes. I hope people go watch it. Let's go check it out, people.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. Movies like this, I can't even stress how important it is for people like you, people like your listeners. You're the ones that can make or break movies like this. We don't have budgets or anything to market or anything like that. So just you passing the word on in this way and your listeners passing the word on in any way they can, whether they like a tweet or reshare or do anything, it may seem meaningless, but I can't tell you that is really how these projects get off the ground. So if you know, go check it out and share it with your friends. Spread the word because it really is a big help. So thanks so much for having me on.
I want to thank Jamie again for chatting with me, taking the time out of his day to talk to me about not only Last Night at Terrace Lanes, but getting into screenwriting and the journey that he kind of went on to get into film and everything else. It was a great talk, and I can't thank him enough for doing it. But like I said, go check out his movie. Absolutely a blast. I loved it so much. Before I head out, I want to give you one recommendation. I know we're talking about Dread Presents and Epic Pictures films. There's one that, well, there are quite a few. You can find a lot of their movies streaming on Tubi, on Amazon Prime, and elsewhere. There's one that I didn't mention at the top that is kind of a slow burn movie that I would recommend checking out. It's called Sacrifice, and it stars Barbara Crampton. And if you're a horror fan, you know who Barbara Crampton is. But this is a very slow burn, H.P. Lovecraftian type of film that I really, really liked. Like, it is definitely a slow burn. It takes a while to kind of really get going for you. And then you get to, you know, an end that is cool ending that it just all worked out well for me. And I really enjoyed it. I know you can stream Sacrifice on Tubi, as well as many more of their films. So go check out Sacrifice. Go search out other films of theirs because they're doing a great job with indie horror. Can't wait to see what else they're bringing out in the future. Well, that will do it for another chapter of Old Man Brad. Thank you so much for listening. I'll be back soon with a brand new episode. Next week, I have an interview with Andy Edwards, the director of Punch. Make sure you watch for that. Just subscribe to the show and you'll never miss any episodes of Old Man Brad. Just snuggle up in that blanket, turn off the lights, because it's okay to be scared. We'll talk to you later, everybody.